Now on the phone, I believe we have Saja Tracy from the Spotlight 19 subscribable audio show that covers everything that's going on in the election this fall, with Democrats challenging Representative John Faso, the Republican from Kinderhook. And Tuesday is Election Day, June 26th, and Saja Tracy is here to explain what's going on in the election. Saja, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you so much for talking to us today. What is the state of the election, I guess? Is it 3 days, 4 days before the vote begins?
We're 4 days out before the Democratic primary, and that's only for the federal offices. The statewide primary is in September. And, you know, I really can't say who's in the lead, or we have seven contenders, so it's definitely been a lively election. That's my baby in the background.
That's all right. Yeah.
He's very interested in the primary, obviously. But we have six men who are running for the office who have been running for almost a year, and we have one woman, who Erin Collier, who jumped into the race late. So it's definitely been an interesting race. And it's getting a lot of national attention, too.
And there, I guess some candidates are claiming that some people are in the lead and or others are not, but there hasn't been an actual public poll released that tells us who is in the lead, right?
Right. And there was some talk of either Siena or Marist, the two institutions that are nearest to us, doing a poll, but that didn't happen and is pretty unlikely to happen this close to Election Day. So all we're relying on is the candidates' internal polling, which is going to be very, you know, it's going to have its own biases. And the polling seems to be based mostly on fundraising. So the top fundraisers are Antonio Delgado, the lawyer from Rhinebeck, Pat Ryan, the veteran who now lives in Gardiner, and Brian Flynn, who's actually the only one who resides in Greene County.
And tell who's the top fundraiser from inside the district?
I believe it's Gareth Rhodes, who has the most donations from the district. I may be mistaken. It might be Antonio just because he has so many, but I'm pretty sure it's Gareth Rhodes who's leading with donations in the district. And he's actually in fourth place. But when you get some of the mailers and other ads from the top three contenders, they've kind of limited the race to the three of them. But the only thing that suggests that is their fundraising totals and potential internal polling, which, you know, isn't released publicly.
So the donations from within the campaign might be one indicator of who has more support. Although you never know who's going to show up on Election Day, I guess.
Right. And this race could be won with as few as 3,000 votes. In 2016, which was a presidential year, there were about 20,000 Democratic voters who showed up.
That was the election between Zephyr Teachout and Will Yandick?
Yes. And if we have a similar turnout and it's a seven-way split, it could be, you know, 3,000 votes could win this thing. They are expecting a little bit more of a turnout, about 24,000. And I've neglected to mention two of the other candidates, Jeff Beals and Dave Clegg, who have a very solid ground game, who could also turn out that number.
And I guess, we've interviewed the Columbia County Board of Supervisors election person, Virginia Martin, and she said that there is a little bit uptick in registration. Do you get the sense through the entire district that there is going to be a higher turnout?
There should be a higher turnout because people are far more involved and paying attention much more, especially Democrats this year, because of kind of the outrage against the administration. But, you know, until Election Day, you can't really base it on projections, but there has been an uptick in registration, largely in due to efforts of New York Votes, New York 19 Votes, which is a group that's trying to kind of swing the district, but also encourage additional registration, and has been active since last year. So we could have 24,000 people, but that's not going to change it too much in terms of the seventh race being won by, you know, only a few thousand votes. Now, we could see, of course, one of the candidates carrying, you know, 25% or 30%. And there's been talk about how that's not a mandate. And John Faso might use that against the candidate.
It seems like with seven candidates, it's going to be difficult for any one candidate to get too right. high a percentage.
Hold on.
That's all right. We're talking with Saja Tracy from the Spotlight 19 Subscribable Audio Show. You should give us the website address if people want to listen to your show.
Right. The web address is www.nyspotlight19.com. You can find information about the candidates, and it's kind of independently verified. And you can find all of the audio shows we did with the candidates, which for six of the candidates, we've done, you know, 2-hour-long, long shows. The second round included a lot of, you know, some of their kind of attack traits that John Faso might go after. So how they plan to respond against the GOP attack machine that's definitely, you know, going to come on strong against them. I mean, Paul Ryan's pouring millions of dollars into this district, so it's going to be a tough race. It's already been a tough race, but it will continue to be one, and it will likely get much more nasty come June 27th.
And you and Justin at Spotlight 18 have been solely focusing. I mean, you guys probably know more about this race than the reporters covering it at the Albany Times Union, who are busy doing all kinds of other things besides just this race. It's been a year and a half. How long have you been doing the show?
We launched in April, and the original intention was to solely kind of follow John Faso and his voting record every week, just in an attempt to, there's all these indivisible groups, there's swing left, just to make sure, you know, come November, all of the canvassers and volunteers and people who are paying attention can know what he's actually voting on. And then what actually happened is, I mentioned Gareth Rhodes earlier, he announced in May, and at the time we hadn't actually interviewed anyone, and he was very excited to come on the show. And I think he kind of paved the way for all of the other candidates, and that includes some, there have been two Democrats who have dropped out, so they've all been on the show because I think that Gareth kind of opened the door. And, you know, and since May, we've really been hyper focused on the primary, which in my opinion is probably a little bit too long. I'm kind of ready for Tuesday and Wednesday and to kind of move on. And the ultimate goal, we're kind of a hybrid between, you know, trying to present the facts, but also encouraging this blue wave. So a hybrid between activism and presenting the facts through journalism.
And from talking to the candidates, and also I guess from talking to the public too, what issue do you think is most important, or that the candidates are saying, and is it the same one that the public is interested in?
It's interesting because I think for a lot of the primary voters, and more progressive, they're looking for a candidate that will support Medicare for all. They then come to a potential problem because there are five candidates who are supporting Medicare for all in one form or another. And I think a lot of the candidates that are supporting Medicare for all have leaned into that hard. And even the candidates who aren't also are campaigning on healthcare. So I think that's a huge issue. I don't know how that will pan out in the general, though, because I think issues for just general election voters are really jobs, is what I hear the most in our time canvassing.
And we'll go back to Medicare for a second. The candidates are talking about expanding Medicare, and this week in Congress, wasn't there a congressional committee, the Republicans' budget bill, that they decided to lessen Medicare and Medicaid coverage? Is that what I heard?
Right. I mean, they're all saying they support Medicare for all. Whether that can be a reality is pretty unlikely unless Democrats really. Primary voters are really looking for someone who fights for that.
And you said mostly they're looking for someone who fights for their jobs. How does a congressperson affect jobs locally?
I think that is that's always been the dilemma. I always wonder, people say, I want someone who can bring jobs back. But no one member of Congress will be able to do that. They can vote on things like infrastructure spending and these global initiatives that might bring jobs back, but I think that's where some of the issues with having someone who's one of the issues we talked about is with former Congressman Gibson is how he kept jobs here by making sure, building a relationship with, I believe, one of the factories in the northern part of the district that wanted to move jobs out of the district and kind of convincing them and getting them some sort of subsidies to get them to stay. So that was one way I think a member of Congress could actually affect change in terms of jobs. But, you hear a lot of talk like, I'm a jobs creator. Right, but as a member of Congress, I don't know what jobs you're creating other than, you're creating some jobs in your offices and your staff. So, but that's only, minuscule number.
I guess they can bring back pork, these funding things that are hidden in other bills that give money to local firehouses and local projects, bridge construction,
right,
and things
absolutely.
Like that. The kind of thing that voters dislike in the concept of, but love it when it happens in their district.
They love it and hate it because we're about to have a bridge redone. That's a route to our house, and it's going to make all of our comings and goings about 15 minutes longer. So we've been hearing a lot of complaints, but at the same time, people don't want crumbling infrastructure. So it's always a double-edged sword. But the thing is that's so interesting is that John Faso, we spend a lot of our show criticizing his record, but he does vote for things that kind of benefit our district directly. I think his main criticism, and it's a totally valid one, is that he has been very absent, or he does not announce, his comings and goings in the district. And I've heard that from Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, the previous two people representing this district, at least up here where I am from, is Scott Murphy and Chris Gibson. They listed public events on their website. They held traditional town meetings that had access to the public. And Murphy was a Democrat in the district.
In Dutchess, they open at 6 a.m. And again, it's a seven-way race. So you do have to, if you want to make a knowledgeable decision and not base it just on TV ads and, your mailers, you need to learn a little bit about seven candidates.
And so going to your website might be one of the best ways to do that. What, give the website out again.
It's NYSpotlight, NYSpotlight.com. And there is a link to, we're actually putting out another guide that just has a side-by-side comparison of the candidates, and it should be out a little bit later today. But we also have all of the backgrounds and, positions of the candidates on the website, which are largely the same. We discussed Medicare for All a little bit earlier. That's one area of difference. And the only other really important area of difference in terms of their positions is five of the candidates have supported an act called the Off Fossil Fuel Act, and two of them have not.
And which, what is the Off Fossil Fuel Act, and which ones are supporting and which ones are not?
It's basically to prevent, additional creation of fossil fuel infrastructure, and to actually achieve a goal of getting off fossil fuels by, I believe, 2030. And the two candidates that aren't supporting it are Antonio Delgado and Pat Ryan, the other candidates, and Jeff Beals was actually the first to sign on to it. And I do think he has kind of pushed the other candidates to make some of these moves. But so Jeff Beals, Dave Clegg, Aaron Collins, and Gareth Rhodes have all supported this act. So those are the same candidates that are also supporting Medicare for All. So, you know, there are two kind of slightly more center, but overall these candidates are all fairly progressive. So, you know, it's going to be a tough decision. And at this point you really have to base it on other factors like,
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You just said there's only really two issues that there's a lot of differences on. What are the other factors that people might consider?
I think you have to really look at background of the candidates, and in terms of, you know, what the issues that will be, how FASL will attack them. So a little bit of electability, and also what kind of connection and turnout is the candidate going to inspire. I think that a lot of hyper-involved people are getting, you know, really in the weeds these last few days of the primary and kind of butting heads. But overall, we have a really good slate of candidates, all of whom I think could beat FASL. I think people sometimes get in their heads about it, that only one person can beat FASL. No, I think they can all potentially beat FASL. They'll have to employ different strategies, but I think people need to look at the background. I know an issue up here that has been talked about a lot is whether someone moved to the district to run, and that's come up in this election as well. So I think people really need to think about what's most important to them and their neighbors if they want to flip this seat to a Democratic one in November.
Can you go through each candidate one by one and just tell us something quickly that you found surprising about them?
Surprising. That's interesting. I think, yeah, I like to go through them alphabetical, so that way it doesn't indicate any bias. So I think for Jeff Beals, what I found most surprising is that he's really campaigning as the Bernie Sanders Democrat. But if you really... Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
If you look at into his background, his kind of activism and, campaigning this way has really been is something new that began in 2016 when he supported Bernie Sanders. So it was surprising to me that there wasn't more of a record for Jeff Beals. With Dave Clegg, it's interesting that you ask if there's anything surprising, because he's kind of the stalwart candidate that does not have any flaws. He's been a pillar of the community. So I guess I was surprised that he's running, because he's such a good guy and he lacks ego. So I was definitely surprised to see someone who's contributed so much to the community actually running for office. You know, definitely not the usual mold of a politician. Aaron Collier, I kind of reserve talking too much about her because I've never actually met her, because she entered the race in April, I believe. We did do a phone interview with her. I think I'm surprised by the fact that she chose to run in such a crowded field where it's not so much about the crowd, it's more about the fact that the other candidates have been campaigning for a year. So I was surprised she chose to jump into this race without any other political experience. But that said, none of our candidates have ever held office. Antonio Delgado, I think what's surprising about him, he's a Rhodes Scholar, he has this stellar academic record, but he actually... after graduating from Harvard Law School, went and pursued a creative career as a hip-hop artist. I think that makes him a little bit more down-to-earth than this, you know, scholarly, you know, person who's very outside the mold of this district overall, but he does have, you know, he followed his dreams and he went to LA, and that I was surprised to learn that. And I'm even more surprised by the fact he's very open about it, because I think a lot of voters think that it will be used as an attack about him, but I really appreciate that he leans into it and doesn't try and, you know, sweep it under the rug like other politicians might. Brian Flynn, who's the candidate from Greene County, I think what I was surprised most about is he is very down to earth, even though he has a great campaign apparatus. He's hired a lot of local people and a really veteran campaign manager, but he's still he doesn't have that aura of politician where they have handlers. He's very down to earth when you meet him, and I think that's a lot of his appeal, because he does if up in Greene County you can see he does have a lot of support. I guess that leaves me with Gareth Rhodes and Pat Ryan. Gareth Rhodes, I think I'm most surprised by the fact that when we first met him back in May, I think Justin and I were both unsure, because of his youth, what kind of, you know, campaign he would run, how he would stand toe-to-toe with people like Antonio and Brian, who had also announced at the time. And he's done a great job. His campaign has been surging, so I've been surprised, and, you know, by what an amazing campaign he's run. He's taken his Winnebago to every single town and hamlet in the district, all 163. So I'm surprised that Gareth, who when we first met him, we were a little bit apprehensive about, you know, what kind of campaign is this very youthful contender going to run. But honestly, he's run the best campaign. And then that leaves me with Pat Ryan, I guess. What I've been a little bit surprised about Pat is, honestly, he has leaned hard into the gun issue over the past month. And I've been surprised to see him or any candidate do that, because it is a fairly divisive issue. And up here, there are a lot of voters that aren't thrilled to see that. But I appreciate that he's done that. And I think... I do think he's the only candidate that could do that because of his status as a veteran. So that's kind of rather lengthy, but just that's what came to mind immediately.
Sure. Let me see if I can go through quickly my guesses at the common negative thing about each candidate that's going around. Like Delgado is the African-American who can't win. Rhodes is a Cuomo lackey. Clegg doesn't have enough support. Collier got in it late and only talks about the fact that she's a woman and she's late for campaign appearances often. What are the other ones? Flynn. I don't like Flynn's ad that implies that the other candidates have a different Medicare opinion than he does, when he's only talking really about two of them. Who else am I leaving out? Ryan had the surveillance issue that he worked for this company that surveilled Americans. Who am I leaving? Beals is doesn't seem to have enough momentum. I don't know. Are those the? I'm probably getting a couple of those wrong.
You're pretty close, actually. I think with Jeff Beals is something that comes up is because, you know, you and I are more tuned in. Which, you know, he worked for the CIA almost 20 years ago and he wasn't doing anything covert, but I think that's something that could be spun as
right.
negative.
And yeah.
Also his years in Iraq that he uses to kind of show he has experience on the foreign policy front, but also, you know, he was there during a very turbulent time when a lot of bad things were going on. That all said, you know, ultimately John Faso has a lot more negatives than any of these candidates, so really harping too much on the negatives, you know, you have to keep in mind what FAS you will be using. And then I guess for Dave Clegg, I think people are also concerned, in addition to his campaign not having momentum, also the fact that he's a little bit older, how many terms will he serve? Although definitively he told Spotlight 19 that, you know, he's in it, he's a very, you know, he's in the 3500 club, he's incredibly fit, he could be in it for 10 years.
He just did that long bike ride, right?
Right, he did a 200-mile bike ride around the district. I think with Delgado, it's also an issue of moving to the district. Actually, a few of the candidates have that. They don't have long residency histories in the district.
Well, actually, the Republicans put out something about how several of them did not vote in 2016 inside the district.
Right. The Republicans will use that attack for pretty much everyone except Dave Clegg, actually. I mean, they can try to use it for Dave Clegg. It won't stick. But even Gareth Rhodes, who was born and raised here, and Pat Ryan, they've tried to use that because they were living somewhere else in 2016. But actually, they were actually from the district, which John Faso is not. I think you mentioned Brian Flynn. I think one of his one of the things he could be attacked with is he's a very wealthy man. I think people forget that John Faso comes from very humble beginnings. Out on Massapequa, he's one of five kids. His family did not have a lot of money, so I'm sure Brian Flynn will, and he already has been in the Washington Examiner last week, be attacked for his wealth. He also had a second home here. There's kind of mixed opinions about second homeowners. I'm sure you've encountered them. And then I guess, you know, Pat Ryan's negative is a negative for primary voters, the surveillance and his ties with Palantir and Dataminer. But ultimately, I don't think that those issues will matter so much in the general.
And Faso himself has only been attacking one or two of the candidates. Is that right? Or who is he attacking? And is it like trying to pick the candidate he wants to run against by attacking them and making it seem like that's the one he doesn't want to run against?
I have no idea what Faso's campaign strategy for his attack on. He's recently attacked Jeff Beals, who Jeff has gotten a lot of national press attention lately in the Rolling Stone. I actually think something's coming out today on This American Life, which is a very popular podcast. And Faso on his campaign Twitter, which is John Faso NY, has been attacking Jeff. He has given a statement against Gareth Rhodes back in January. So it's pretty unclear.
That's part of Faso's long fight with Cuomo, right?
Right. So, I mean, people, you mentioned that as Gareth's potential negative. The good thing about that negative is that we've already seen John Faso's playbook against Cuomo. So you kind of know what to expect. You know, Gareth has a pretty good answer about, you know, he's not one of the three men in a room in Albany. He was working in Andrew Cuomo's press outfit for 4 years because it was the best position he could get right out of college. And it gave him a lot of experience. And you can see that it's helping him. You see that he has, you know, these very professional press releases. And he was just endorsed by the New York Times, probably because not only because he, you know, is running a great campaign, but I'm sure he developed some good relationships with members of the press.
And that's what's happening this week. The endorsements are flowing in every hour. There seems like there's another endorsement from a union or a newspaper or a politician.
Right. It's been interesting to see everyone save them for the end. But I guess that's to show that your campaign has momentum. I fear that some of these very late endorsements are going to get lost and people won't even know about them. But we've seen all of the campaigns have gotten these late endorsements. We've seen Malcolm Nance just endorsed Pat Ryan a few days ago. And then we had the Kingston Times, Saugerties Times, and Woodstock Times endorse Dave Clegg.
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon, which could be a plus or a minus depending on who you talk to. But that's actually something John Fazio. It's interesting to see John Fazio attack Jeff Fields. I do think he's doing that to show his base that all of the Democrats are very far left, and that's how he's been on the attack against Jeff. But I've really seen him only. His surrogates have attacked everyone, though, except Dave. I've never seen an attack against Dave Clegg yet by the Republicans. John Fazio has surrogates, and then the National Republican Congressional Committee also, you know, puts out little attacks against the candidates.
I haven't seen this, but have any of the candidates come out and said, if I lose, I will continue to campaign like I've been doing so we can have a 7-on-1? Do you think that's going to happen, or we're not going to see Erin Collier again after Tuesday if she loses?
Again, I can't speak that much about Erin because I don't know her campaign as well, but I would guess we may not see her as much. We haven't seen her as much, you know, since she announced. I've heard that she's been doing some campaigning in New York City, some fundraisers, so that's something that our six other candidates have really shied away from. You know, so as not to get painted with the brush that, you know, you're getting money from New York City elites or something.
They're still raising, a lot of them are still raising money from outside the district, but just not person.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they're not having those events, but they've definitely toned it down, especially in the last leg of the campaign. I was pretty surprised to hear that she was down there.
In the past week, she was down there, is what the story is, right?
Yeah, so in terms of who I think will actually campaign for the eventual winner, if it's not them, I think Gareth will. He has been to every town, and he is kind of assured us that he's told Spotlight 19 that this seat is so important to flip that he will work for, you know, whoever wins. And they've all pledged support the eventual winner. Antonio also, I think I asked him very specifically on the podcast, you know, how will you actually help the eventual winner if it's not you? And he's like, you know, I'll help in any way I can, whatever that person wants. Do I think that some of the candidates have butt heads and maybe they won't work for each other? It's possible. But I think that at the end of the day, next Wednesday morning, they will all release statements, you know, supporting the winner.
And a couple of them have done joint appearances, haven't they?
Yeah, I think Gareth and Dave actually did a debate in Sullivan County. It's actually a county where they're both very popular. It's interesting because it's a county that's also often ignored by some of the other candidates. And it has actually the second highest Democratic enrollment. So we'll see how that actually plays to either of their advantage. And, you know, if you asked me a few weeks ago, I would have said maybe Antonio's in the lead. But as I talk to people more and more in other parts of the district, and because there's no clear winner in Ulster County, which you really have to be first or second in Ulster County to win this race, or you have to be at least second in Ulster County to win this race. There is no clear front runner here. That's where I'm calling in from.
That's where most of the candidates are from, right?
Right. It really remains anyone's race, even now, like 5 days out.
And that's where most of the Democratic votes are in Ulster County. Is that Ulster Sullivan have the most voters?
Ulster has the most. It's interesting though because Ulster is going to be split up by some of the hometown people. But I actually see a lot of support for Brian Flynn too, who's, you know, from Green.
But he works at the Woodstock Day School, right?
That's Jeff.
Oh, that's Jeff Beals. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. See, so it's
easy to get it mixed up. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're getting them mixed up, just think about the average voter who hasn't been, following it. They're, you know, when I talk to some of them, they're like, yeah, I know there's a lot of candidates. I see the TV ads for this, or I've heard about the lawyer from Rhinebeck, but then they confuse them. So those people are really relying on, local media, which doesn't spend too much time on the primary. They are spending a little bit. So, you know, we'll see. That's why I still think it's anyone's race. But my neighbor across the street, for example, has seen Pat's ad and gotten mailers from Antonio, and a Jeff Beals volunteer visited her house, but she didn't know about the other people running in the race. So,
and there's ever shrinking local media that there's, you know, newspapers keep falling. Who is covering? Where are the candidates trying to reach out besides, you know, personal appearances? Is there a lot of Facebook ad spending? Is there, you know, I've seen Ryan ads, I've seen Delgado ads, I've seen Flynn ads. Have I seen Rhodes ads? I know we get mailers from, I think this week, yesterday we got a Delgado and a Rhodes mailer. Where do you think the efforts are going?
I really think that this ultimately, overall, with a few exceptions, was a very grassroots campaign, and people were going door to door because ultimately it's a vast district. It's not supported by, or it's not served by any particular media market. And even these local outlets, I know there's been a huge effort to, everyone has letters to the editor lately, and all of these smaller papers from their supporters for the past few weeks. There is a lot of Facebook and social media spending, but I don't know how it's going to translate into voters, because the primary voters definitely trend older, and that's something that people have noticed at all the various, there were actually 30 candidate forums. The 30th forum was last night. I kind of gave up on watching them, or we did initially try to watch them all, or at least listen to them all, but I don't know if I'll get around to listening to the one from last night. But if you look at Gareth Rhodes and Jeff Beals and Dave Clegg, they really put a lot of, and Brian Flynn, they really put a lot of effort into doing lots and lots of appearances in kind of the smaller towns and small, you know, the counties that have lower Democratic enrollment, to just to get out and make sure they reach people.
And is Spotlight 19 going to endorse someone in the final hours of the campaign here?
I don't think we're going to endorse, because the original goal of the podcast was to work with the eventual winner. There are going to be a lot of volunteers that are going to come into the district from outside of the district. So to make sure we can educate them, get them excited about the candidate, there are groups like Swing Left and Turnout Pack that are working to turn this district blue. So it was really used as a tool. And also for the candidate to just respond to what John Faso has been doing each week. So, for example, yesterday, I believe he voted on the farm bill. So the candidate should be able to respond and have that in a podcast. So that's something we're planning on doing. Therefore, we're trying not to endorse. We're really going to try and support whoever the winner is. That said, we're definitely open to talking about our experiences with the campaigns, and I'm sure people could figure out who our top three are. Although I have to tell you, I'm not 100% sure who I will pull the lever for on Tuesday.
And in general elections up here, at least, the Friday before the election marks the beginning of the underhanded whisper campaign, rumors that go out that are false. We always try to debunk them as much as possible, but I haven't heard any this year. I mean, usually it's Republicans saying things about Democrats. Is there any super negative thing going on under the radar that you've heard about, or you know, people tearing down signs, that kind of shenanigans?
I mean, I haven't heard about the sign. I hear about it in other elections for sure. You know, taking down signs. I usually see signs where, especially on, you know, not outside of houses, but in more public thoroughfares, where it's just like five of the candidates in a row or something. I think that in terms of negative, there was a pledge that six of the seven candidates signed to not campaign negatively. I think
who did not sign it?
Jeff Beals actually leaned in and said, you know, I'm not going to sign it. And he's been cast as going negative. I think that's a little bit of a stretch because he is calling out some of his fellow candidates on their backgrounds and histories, whereas the other candidates have had kind of a, this was before Aaron came in, but a gentleman's agreement to, you know, not criticize too harshly the other candidates. That said, they've obviously started to do that much more than since they went into the initial agreement. But I think there was a rumor that one of the super PACs that was supporting Pat Ryan was going to do a negative ad, and in order to stop that, I think a lot of the activists fear that John Frazzell will use, you know. For example, if we were to endorse or say something very negative about a candidate, if John Frazzell were to say, you know, even Spotlight 19, like a liberal, you know, podcast says, like, this candidate is, you know, whatever. So is an elite, for example. So
I thought that was a good thing. That was at the Minnesota rally the other night, right? It's a good thing to be an elite, right?
Yeah, I mean...
we're talking about the president saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the president, because that's something that I think a lot of...
The elephant in the room.
Yeah, the candidates have shied away from, which I think is smart. They've tried to not talk about so much, make their campaigns about Trump, but it's interesting because that's ultimately why there's so much interest in the campaign. You know, this reaction to this administration.
Yeah, in the last few days, the children issue has forced its way into this campaign. You know, it just they can't help but talk about it because it's happening in Kingston.
And they should, because definitely there is that child that's being held in Kingston. We've seen, and Aaron Collier actually went and visited the facility, which, you know, I just said we try to remain neutral, but I was a little bit critical of that decision. On Twitter, and when I saw that, because I knew that the home itself did not want people visiting and, you know, making you know, just bothering the work that they're doing. So I was a little bit critical of her, and maybe I abandoned my neutrality a little bit.
Yeah, that was my initial gut reaction was I found out, I was like, well, let's do the radio show live from there. And then you've got more information. And it's like, well, there's other kids there. And is that going to actually help that child, you know, and is it just going to make a headache for that the whole staff there that's just trying to do their best to.
Right. I mean, in all of these facilities in New York, and I can say this from experience, I used to be, I know we're getting a little bit off topic, but I'll keep it short. I was a court-appointed special advocate for kids going through foster care in New York. These facilities are really well-regulated. It's not what you're seeing at the border with the tent cities and the cages. These are group homes, and actually all of the children in all of the group homes are separated from their parents. So, you know, putting a highlight on one child because their situation, you know, happens to be in the media and happens to be caused by the administration, whereas another child there who's also separated from their parent because of, you know, drug abuse or because their parent is incarcerated is, you know, not necessarily the best way to go, in my opinion. So I think I definitely respect the position of the home.
All right. Any final thoughts, or again, tell us the website if a listener just tuned in and wants more information, trying to make up their mind about who to vote for on Tuesday. Any final thoughts?
Sure. If you're interested in getting to know all seven candidates who are running for the Democratic primary on Tuesday, June 26th, you should head over to nyspotlight.com. You can get information about all the candidates. You can hear their interviews. And the second interview they did was them actually interacting with constituents. So you can get a really good feel for, you know, what kind of potential congressman they'd be and how they'd stack up against John Frazzell.
And you think it's going to be a long night Tuesday? We won't know this right away?
I don't think we'll know it right away. I think the polls close at 9. I know in my town, where we live in Hurley, even in the town election or the local elections in 2017, they were still counting until 1 a.m. So I think it's going to be a long night. There's a lot of election watch parties for the campaigns going on in Kingston. So you could actually do a fun party hop on Tuesday.
the Ulster candidates are each having their own parties, or are they set up by other people?
I believe most of them are having their own. I don't think they're parties, because I think nobody knows who's going to win.
Right, but
watch events.
I'm sure there will be alcohol available.
Yeah.
One way or the other, people will want to drink by that point, just at least to take a breath that it's over. And do you have a sense of which candidate has had the less sleep in the past? Boy, this has been a long campaign, a year.
The least sleep. Oh, boy. Probably Gareth, because he was like having an event every day. Also Brian Flynn.
Did Gareth sleep on the Winnebago?
I think sometimes he did sleep.
I'm sure they all sleep in their cars sometimes, right?
Yeah. I think that the two of them, I believe the two of them made the most public appearances. I'm pretty sure about that.
Who, Rhodes and who else?
Rhodes and Flynn.
And Flynn.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, not to discredit the others' public appearances, but they have been in it from the beginning of the campaign. Rhodes, Flynn, and Delgado, I mean, close on their heels were all of the other candidates, with the exception of Collier. So, but I know the two of them, and the two of them also completely broke from what they were doing before. So they took time off to focus on their congressional run.
All right, well, we are going to get cut off in 2 minutes with the City Folk Show, but we've been talking to Saja Tracy from the Spotlight 19 show, and thank you so much for all your work covering all this in the past 16 months, 18,
yeah.
12, 14 months, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not going to get a break after, I guess you're going to take a little break, and then you're back for the general election?
Yeah, we've been on a little hiatus because of a baby who was on the show a little bit earlier, but we'll be back for sure after the primary, and trying to work with the eventual winner to kind of make sure Faz was on his toes as we go into the general election.
All right, well, congratulations on the new family member down there.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you again for having us. It's been great talking to you and kind of making sense of this really interesting primary.
Yes, I think you probably informed some listeners about who they might choose on Tuesday with the Democratic primary. Polls open most places at noon and go to 9 p.m., but check with your local listings for more details about that. All right, Saja Tracy, thank you for calling in on the WGXC Morning Show.
Thanks, Tom.